This week we will consider 2 Kings 8, 7 through 15, in which Hazael became king of Aram. Herein Elisha went to Aram to deliver a curious prophecy that Hazael would tell Ben-Hadad II that he would recover from an illness, despite the fact that he would die. The passage is not long, nor is it dense with practical application. Nonetheless, on a personal note, it is one of my favorite Bible stories. I appreciate the unexpected ending, the curious connection to Elijah's ministry, and perhaps most of all, the obscurity of it. I love digging up hidden gems, and this is a story that almost no one knows. There is probably no character in the Bible who has enough narrative to make him more than just a name, whose story is more hidden away than Hazael. Your passage then is 2 Kings 8, 7 through 15, and if you have not read it yet, I recommend that you pause and do so now. The passage opens by telling us that Elisha went to Damascus. Damascus was the capital of Aram, northeast of Israel, in what is modern-day Syria. In fact, many modern translations will say Syria instead of Aram. Ben-Hadad II was king of Aram. We've seen Ben-Hadad II and his father, Ben-Hadad I, several times over the last several months, usually in the context of making war against Israel. Why had Elisha gone to Aram? A better question might be, why did Elisha not go to Aram sooner? The prophets had orders to go to Damascus at least a decade prior. When Elijah had fled from Jezebel, way back in 1 Kings 19, he went to Mount Horeb, where God told him, "Go back the way you came and go to the desert of Damascus. When you get there, anoint Hazael king over Aram." That from 1 Kings 19:15. God also told Elijah to anoint Jehu king over Israel and Elisha as prophet. Elijah did only one of those things. He anointed Elisha, but apparently he never did anoint Jehu and Hazael. If he did so, there's no record of it. We contemplated this curious context back on May 26th of 2024, in a message titled, "Elijah on Mount Horeb." My supposition is that Elisha had gone to Aram to rectify this long-standing oversight. The circumstances could not have been better for doing so. Ben-Hadad was ill, perhaps near to his natural death, and Hazael, whom Elisha was to anoint in his place, was not only in Ben-Hadad's service, but would be dispatched directly to meet Elisha. When the king found out the prophet was in town, he sent Hazael to inquire of Elisha whether his illness would kill him. Hazael went, bringing along a treasure trove of 40 camel loads of fine goods to pay the prophet for his services. We recall that Elisha had only recently survived Ben-Hadad's siege on Samaria, as we discussed last week. I suppose that when one tries to kill a prophet, it takes a big price to secure his services thereafter. And so Hazael asked the 40 camel load question in verse 9. Will Ben-Hadad recover? Elisha gave a very interesting answer. Ben-Hadad would die, but Hazael should tell Ben-Hadad that he would recover. On the surface, it appears that Elisha was telling Hazael to lie. If that was the case, it would appear to be an unprophetic sort of directive. Lying is generally a sin, though it is a sin of relatively low rank, one which is justifiable under certain circumstances. See, for example, our message, "Rahab and the Spies," published February 23rd of 2020, in which Rahab lied to save the lives of the spies, for an example of that. However, I don't think we should view this as a prophetic directive to lie. Instead, this is more of a paradox. Ben-Hadad would both survive the sickness and also die. But Hazael shouldn't bother to tell Ben-Hadad all of the details, just tell him that he'll recover from the sickness. Of course, for us as readers, this is a tantalizing story. We're drawn in to ask, how will Ben-Hadad both survive and also die? Rather than answering this question, Elisha put Hazael into an awkward situation. He stared at Hazael. He stared at him in silence, apparently with great intensity, and he did so for so long that Hazael was embarrassed and made to feel uncomfortable. Apparently, during this staring session, God gave Elisha a vision of what would become of Hazael. It was no pleasant vision. Hazael would be a destroyer of Israel. He would burn the fortresses, he would kill the men in battle, and he would not spare the women and the children. He would even be so brutal as to rip open the pregnant women. Seeing this, Elisha was overwhelmed with emotion and began to weep. Watching a grown man cry, I'm sure, made the situation no less awkward for Hazael. Finally, Hazael asked why Elisha was crying, and Elisha told him the prophecy. This prophecy took Hazael by surprise. Little me? A killer and a plunderer? Surely not. Hazael was just a humble servant of the king. He characterized himself as a mere dog. He was no killer. He was the kind of man who gets embarrassed when someone looks at him for too long. For Hazael, this claim probably sounded just as strange as the claim that Ben-Hadad would both survive and die. And so Hazael asked, "How can this be?" Elisha gave the answer. It would be because Hazael would become king of Aram. But how, of course, if Ben-Hadad was to survive? All of this, from within the context of the story, is mind-boggling. The prophets had known for a decade that Hazael would be king. Maybe they had avoided telling him this to stop him for as long as possible from becoming a horrible killing machine. But for Hazael, mere moments ago, he had no intention of becoming king, much less a ruthless warrior king. And how would Ben-Hadad survive and also die? We come then to the surprise resolution. Part of what makes this story so interesting is that the prophecies are self-fulfilling. Ben-Hadad would survive his sickness, and Hazael told him as much. Ben-Hadad survived then for at least one more day, and I suppose that he woke up the next day recovered. Had it not been for Elisha's prophecy, that would have been the end of it. Before he talked to Elisha, Hazael had no intent of being king, nor would his master have died. But knowing that he would become king, Hazael killed his master himself. He suffocated or drowned Ben-Hadad by soaking a cloth with water and holding it over Ben-Hadad's face. With the king dead, Hazael seized the throne. So Ben-Hadad recovered, and then he died, not of sickness, but of murder, and Hazael, who had no intent of being king otherwise, became king. Hazael would go on to fulfill the other prophecies about him. He would be at war with Israel in Ramoth-Gilead only 13 verses after this. During his reign, he would march clean across Israel to capture Gath, the Philistine city on the southeast, before beating Jerusalem into submission. See 2 Kings 12, 17-18 for that. Per 2 Kings 13, 3-5, Hazael kept Israel as a vassal state for a long time. He fought against Israel right up to his death in 2 Kings 13:22-24. In doing so, Hazael fulfilled the word that God had given to Elijah concerning him in 1 Kings 19:17, that he would kill with the sword, presumably the wicked of Ahab's family, and that Jehu would kill those who remained. But we'll get to that another day. That, then, is the story of how Hazael became king of Aram, as recorded in 2 Kings 8:7-15. It was the curious case of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Elisha told him that his master would die in an unexpected way, and Hazael would go on to become king. Before the prophecy, Hazael had no such intent, but as a result of it, he killed his master and seized the throne. He would go on to wreak havoc on Israel for generations to come. It is one of the Bible's most obscure stories, another example of Elisha's prophetic abilities, and one of my personal favorite tales. For those of you who are listening to this message away from your computer and are looking for more like it, you can find us at eastjordan.church.